I don't recall seeing you in here before, little lady, said the barkeep. He had a neck tattoo and a gold front tooth. The rag over his shoulder that covered the strap of his red, white, and blue patterned wife beater was as dingy and yellow as the remainder of his smile. That's 'cause I ain't been in here before, said Lurleen Stokes. She was winded, tired, low on funds, and without wheels. It had been a rough few days, and it showed. What'll it be? A bottle of water, a whiskey, neat, and a Pabst. He sat them down before her in a neat row, the three wise men. Lurleen threw back the shot, slammed the entire bottle of water, then popped the top of the beer. She didn't have enough cash left for food and drinks, so it was drinks only, until her ride showed up. "You got a juke?" she asked. "Got a little machine in the back corner. Outdated as all get, though. Seems generous to call it a juke." "She got any Dolly in her?"
"Dolly Parton?"
"What other Dolly you ever heard about?"
"Used to. Mostly her gospel records. Owner of the place still got that old-time religion."
"Why used to?"
"Well, you might not have heard, but Dolly did some interviews talking about the gays and what have you."
She sipped her beer.
"Oh, yeah?
Like how? What did she say?"
"Your typical liberal media bull stuff. The gays is okay in her book. They're just the same as straights, all that."
"And that not sit well with you, pal?"
The barkeep finally picked up on her tone. She was baiting him.
"Wasn't my call. That was up to the owner. He's stuck in the old days, takes the stories about Sodom pretty serious, you know?"
Now he was baiting her right back.
"He uses the expression, filthy queers. And I'm not saying I approve of that kind of language, but let's just say no one in this bar minds too much. So before you pop off at the mouth, little lady, I'd suggest you check your volume."
Lurleen finished her beer.
"Any other night, I'd come over the bar and choke you out, boy. But I'm too damn tired."
"That's so."
"Oh, yeah. That is certainly fucking so. Instead, I'll take another PBR."
He reached down into the cooler without taking his eyes off of her. After setting it down right in front of her, he pulled it back a few inches.
"You do got money to pay for this, right? I mean, now I study on you a piece, you look rough around the edges.
Tired. Road worn. Got the attitude, trying to start a fight. Maybe you're here to hustle drinks." She pushed the bar stool back and stood up.
"I'm tired, but I ain't that tired. Yeah, I got your money, you crusty pig fucker. It's in my pocket, right here. Why don't you come and fish it out?"
A hand fell on her shoulder. A big man. She was lost in the shadow of his wide-brimmed sheriff's hat.
"There a problem here?" he said.
"No, sir," said the barkeep. "She was just leaving."
"Actually, sheriff, we were discussing this establishment and its policy on filthy queers."
She grinned sidelong.
"They ain't fur it. They agin it."
Sheriff Tom Kendo Jr. took off his hat and rested it on the bar. His mighty mullet unfurled, cascading down his back and across his beefy shoulders in a wavy waterfall that would make Billy Ray Cyrus himself fall to his knees and weep with envy. Actually, Miss Stokes here, she's right and proper lesbian. You've heard of those. On the internet? The sheriff cracked his knuckles. I'm the queer one. But I'm going to have to insist you call me Sheriff Queer. The barkeep just stayed immobile. Stone steady, eyes wide, mouth zipped and locked. Maybe if he didn't move or make noise, they would go away like velociraptors. Cat got your tongue? The sheriff looked around, tapping his fingers on the bar. Does she owe you anything? The barkeep shook his head. Lurline, let's leave these fine folks to their night. Sir, tell the owner he can expect a visit from the health department one of these days. He winked. Just giving you a neighborly heads up. As they walked out to the truck, Lurline elbowed Tom in the ribs. Instead of a bar fight, you call the health department. Man, you have changed. He laughed and gave her a bear hug. I'm glad you're back, baby cousin. I need help, and bad. The kill car is out of control, and I don't know what to do. She gave her cousin a soft smile and said, I thought I might have had an idea, but I don't know. First things first, there's some shit I need to tell you, and you ain't gonna like it. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen, telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem. Killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. They were speeding northbound, with Tom behind the wheel of his jacked-up pickup truck and Lurline in the unfamiliar position of shotgun. You mind I put my feet up? She asked, unstrapping her artificial foot. She propped her one foot, clad in a dirty, stinky white gym sock, and her bare stump up on the dash. Go on, make yourself at home, Tom said. Crack a window, though. Damn, Lurline, you been hiking all this way? I should take you to the degloussing tank. She laughed and leaned back, digging into the corner of the seat, just like Janice used to do, as Lurline always did when she rode shotgun. I had a little accident down Tennessee. Took a train for a while after that, been hitching and walking from there. What you need is some sleep. I'll sleep when I'm dead. Why don't you tell me everything, soup to nuts? What do I need to know, Tommy? Well, how deep a dive you want? How far we got? About an hour. Then give it all to me. And not just the facts, neither. I want the scuttlebutt, too. Tom launched into an epic monologue, pausing only when he needed to answer his radio. He told Lurline about Shep Sweetly and his crew of hooligans, what they had been up to, and how they wound up. All dead? She asked. One of them is missing. Annette, Bergie. I think she ran into the holler. Lurline shook her head. Poor kid. If she ain't dead, then it's something worse. Then Tom told her about the time that had passed since that incident. The new eyewitness reports, the new accidents, the new deaths from people driving the Crooked Neck after dark. Any locals? She asked. Other than Shep's people? No. They're all too spooked to get that close. It's outsiders. There's been three, no, four. Finally, he told her the rumors and innuendo that were crisscrossing the town daily. The grapevine ranged from the ridiculous to the insightful, but nobody knew which was which. So Tom went through everything that he'd heard. Nearing the end of his spiel, the sheriff exited the paved road, then exited the gravel road, and turned onto the half-mile worth of ruts that he called a driveway. So, what are you thinking about all this? He asked. I think I need to see what Shep was building. Kid might have accidentally done us a favor. Tom pulled up to his house and cut the headlights. The sun was finally coming up, bleeding out over the tree line like melting orange creamsicles. You mind showing it to me? She asked. Shep's car? Nah, not yet. This here is my place. Yeah, I remember. It's been a while, but it ain't been a while. So then you remember that I have a shower and towels, and beds, and food, and potable water. What's your point, cousin? The point is, I ain't driving another god-darn mile with you until you shower and change clothes. If you want to be worth half a shit to me, you need coffee, you need to eat, you need some shut-eye. Listen, I have a lot to tell you, Tommy. And I bet you'll tell it a damn sight better after you do what the fuck I say you should do. She opened her mouth, but he shut it with a .45 caliber side eye. She nodded. Fine, whatever. All right, Sheriff. And then burst out laughing. But she knew he was right. She was 40 miles of bad road, so tired that she almost climbed out of his truck without putting her foot back on. They went in the house. Tom explained how Tyler had already left for work. This early? Does he work at the lawn chair factory? Nah, the yoga studio. There's a yoga studio? Apparently. And a yoga master is your boyfriend. It's called a yogi, yes. But he's not my boyfriend, no. Tyler's my best friend. He's my lover. But I don't like the word boyfriend. It's too high school. A yoga master for a boyfriend. That's like hitting the lotto. Tom threw her a towel and one of his old shirts, then pushed her into the bathroom. And I ain't unlocking this door till you smell like a human goddamn being again. That took about 15 minutes, and it might have been the longest shower Lurleen had ever taken. It definitely beat the sponge baths that she had to settle for in Pierre Naroda. Granted that when Monica administered said sponge baths, it was all good fun. But still, nothing beat the steaming hot blast of a proper American shower. When she came out, towel on her head, wearing her cousin's shirt, which hung down to her knees, she was ready to talk. You got coffee? She asked. It'll be 10 minutes, he said with a smirk. Go on and sit on the couch. I'll bring it out. She sat. 2 minutes later, she decided to stretch out and lay down. 2 minutes after that, she was dead ass asleep. Another 2 minutes later, and it was 7 hours later, middle of the afternoon. Tom left her a post-it note on the coffee table next to the couch, which read, "You're welcome. Home at 6. Lurleen went to the kitchen and put on that pot of coffee that her cousin never started. Lurleen sat at the kitchen table, sipping black coffee, when a wispy, thin man with meticulously groomed eyebrows appeared in the doorway. He stared at her. "You must be Tyler. And you must be Lurleen. It's nice to meet you, Tyler. Likewise, I'm sure. You want coffee?" "No, thank you. I only drink tea. Green tea." Tyler moved into the kitchen, and in the blink of an eye, he had taken the place over, pulling out pans, yanking goodies out of the fridge, setting up the cutting board and the blade. "Bit early for dinner, isn't it?" she asked, noting the time. "There's a good bit of prep work involved with this dish. If I'm going to cook, I want to do it right. And, just between us girls, Thomas is a wee bit old-fashioned. He likes dinner ready for him right when he gets home." "Well, ain't you a peach," she said, and tipped her coffee mug to the man. "What's on the menu?" "Crunchy chickpea salad with a shallot vinaigrette and vegan goat cheese crumbles. It's Thomas's favorite." Lurleen suppressed an eye roll, and with proper southern manners, replied, "Well, make enough for three, if you don't mind." Tyler was more than happy to oblige. Lurleen watched him work, and when she went in for a second cup of coffee, she asked him, "Tyler, you know the difference between a chickpea and a garbanzo?" He gave her a blank look. "There is no difference. They are the same thing." A voice boomed from the back door, stealing Lurleen's thunder. "The difference is that Lurleen has never had a garbanzo on her face." Tom sat down at the head of the table, and Tyler gave him a peck on the cheek. "I'm making your favorite." "Oh boy," Tom said. "That's great." Lurleen shot him this look, and he just shook his head at her. "You know, Lurleen hasn't had a proper home-cooked meal in a while, Ty. Make sure to load her up." They sat, and they ate, and they talked until the sun went down. It felt good. It felt like family. And hell, the crunchy chickpea salad wasn't half bad after all. Finally, Lurleen reached over the table and put her hand over Tyler's. "Hun, I don't want to be rude, but I have some personal family matters to talk over with my cousin. It's that kill car business, right?" "It's related to that, yes. Would you mind giving us a few minutes?" "No bother. I need to shower anyway. I must smell like the dickens. And then it's bedtime. I need to get up at 4 a.m. Early to bed, early to rise, right? It was so nice to meet you, Lurleen. Don't be a stranger." She stood to hug him and said, They don't come much, stranger. Tyler kissed Tom on the top of the head and murmured something to him about waking him up later. Tom no-sold it, staying stone-faced, just giving an imperceptible nod. And then the two of them were alone. "You want a beer?" he asked. "I don't know. Is it vegan?" "Don't start. And that salad was good. You know it."
"Tommy, there's some stuff I never told anyone. I don't know if it helps us now or not, but it might. Long overdue that I told somebody. You remember my business with Earl Joe, of course."
"Yeah. I remember you tricking me with a little twink so that I'd be distracted and I wouldn't try to stop you."
"Yeah. About that. I held a lot back, cousin. Because I knew it was wrong. And I didn't want anybody trying to talk sense to me. I was too focused on revenge."
"Yeah, I know. But that's water under the bridge, Lurleen."
"Shut up, Tommy. I don't need to be comforted. I need you to listen. That first night on the neck, the night I lost Janice, the night I lost my foot, it broke me in a way I didn't know I could break. And I still ain't hunky-dory, neither. Janice is stuck in my craw. She haunts me. Because I know that her blood is on my hands. I brought her out there. It was my idea. Janice was scared. But I convinced her that it was all hillbilly bullshit. It was just bedtime stories. Janice never would have gone out on the neck if I hadn't made her think it was safe. But I was so sure. How could them stories about Earl Joe be real? It was foolishness cooked up by moonshiners wanting people to keep their nose out of the holler. I was wrong. I was arrogant. Thought I knew everything. Janice died because of that. My foot ain't nothing but nothing. Janice, she could never be replaced. I see you wanting to talk right now. But I said stay shut up and listen. This is as much for me as it is for you. See, after Janice, I sort of went off the deep end a little bit. I'd never believed any of those myths before, just the same as I never believed in no church. But it felt like my eyes were wide open now. I talked to some folks. I learned a few things. If Earl Joe was real, then maybe these other stories real too. Then I got into the ear of Gas Can Hawkins, and I... Well, cousin, I bribed him. Oh no, Lurleen, you didn't. I bribed him to take me out to the holler. No, don't say it. Don't you fucking say it. Where I could meet the witch of Crooked Neck, Old Leather Stocking. So she could tell me how to kill Earl Joe. Like I said, Tommy, I was broken to pieces. I needed some get back at that old bastard. Of course, I was also accepting the fact that I had been wrong about damn near everything. The ghost stories about the holler, they were true. It never occurred to me before that those stories could be alive. But now that I was awake, I wanted to take advantage. Gas Can
He warned me time and again. Told me that Earl Joe ended up in his current state on account of advice he got from that witch. That just put the nitrous to my brain, because if old Leatherstocking had a hand in starting this, she could damn well help me end it. Cost me 2 bottles of moonshine to get Gas Can to take me out there. Come on now, let's go. I'll tell you the rest on the way. The way where? You said that boy has a half-built kill car in his shop. I'll be needing to see that, and directly. Oh, hell, Lurleen, I just got my boots off. Well, grab your shower shoes, then. All right, let me tell Tyler that I'm heading out. She grabbed his keys while he was out of the room. 5 minutes later, boots on, Tom saw that she was idling in his driveway, sitting at the wheel of his truck. He got shotgun and admonished her. Anyone else tried driving my rig, I'd twist him into a pretzel. Quit your bitching. Oh, look, now he's putting on a seatbelt. That's Tyler's influence, ain't it? Lurleen spun out, throwing mud as she whipped 180 and headed towards the town of Bedford. All the stories about the witch are true. Same as Earl Joe. She has this shitty little cabin, half caved in. But it don't matter none, because she never goes inside anyway, far as I can tell. She's always on that porch of hers, watching that TV. Cabin got no power, mind you, but this ain't no regular television set. Just plays static with someone standing behind it, talking to her. I could never make heads or tails of it, and I was out there a few times. First, the witch just wanted little things. Funyuns, beef stick, grape slurpee. Then she wanted formaldehyde, which I got for her. But then she wanted more. Finally, she asked for me to go down by the Crooked Neck and search for a piece of Janice. They never found her body. I know, he said. I went looking myself a few times. I know you did, cousin. Thanks for that. Anyway, that was a bridge too far for me. I couldn't bear to go looking for a skull or a piece of bone just to give it to that old crone. So instead, I made her a deal. Fool that I was. What'd you give her? Lurleen tapped her leg and pointed down. You gave her your foot? What was left of it, anyways? On agreement that she would tell me what I needed to put down Earl Joe. And she lived up to it. Yes, she did. I gave her that foot. She was giddy as a dang old schoolgirl, like she was stoned. She's the one gave me the idea on getting the kill car trapped between the edge of both worlds. Wouldn't kill him permanent, but it would keep him still. There'd be no way for him to get out without some help. And Shep? Fuck. Shep gave him that help, Tommy said. They parked behind the garage owned by Gas Can Hawkins and cut the lights. That old boy still sleep here? More often than not, Tommy confirmed. Only when he's drunk. Which is every night. Come on, give the guy a break, he said as they climbed out of the truck. Losing your wife like that? Yeah, but how long ago was that? 30 years? Tom shot her a look. And you're one to talk. Lurline let it go. Tom popped the lock on the back door. He was very familiar with it at this point. And then they went into the space formerly rented by Shep Sweetly. Tommy dramatically yanked the tarp free, displaying the car on the rack. Lurline whistled, impressed with what she saw. 1970 Chevelle. This kid had fucking taste. Strong bones, thick skin, big muscles. She ducked underneath to study the guts, then popped the hood to look at the vitals. The car was basically a shell. It was missing a ton of shit. The crew had been far more focused on adding cool stuff like spikes and saw blades, bodywork. But nobody had shown this girl any real love. "Well, it's a start," she concluded. "And you aim to finish her?" "I do. See, Tommy, back then I had it twisted. I tried to fight fire with fire. This time, I'm gonna fight fire with water." "I don't follow." "I'm gonna finish this car, Tommy. I'm gonna trick it out like you won't believe. I'm gonna design the perfect machine to total the kill car and send Earl Joe back to hell." "But what does that mean?" he asked. She didn't get a chance to answer, because the back door of the garage flew open and a bloody, muddy, beaten, bruised, and bedraggled teenage girl stumbled into the room. She was barefoot, her clothes ripped and torn, barely hanging onto her waifish body. She stared at them, surprised they were here. "Bergie?" the sheriff asked, moving towards her. "Holy shit, you're alive!" Bergie recoiled from him, and he stopped right where he was. "Annette, Bergie, it's me, Sheriff Kendo. I'm going to call you an ambulance." "No. No, 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 no. I'm so dizzy." Right then, the old drunk called gas cans stumbled out of the office. "What's all this? I'm trying to sleep in here." Then he saw Bergie. She said, I made it out of there." Then she collapsed to the floor in a limp, damp heap. To be continued in the next episode, The Girl Who Loved Stephen King.
Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. And don't stray far, because this story is barreling right along, and the next one is going to drop before you know it. If you're missing any of the backstory, please go and check out the older episodes, Hellbound and Down, My Life with the Kill Car Cult, and Fiends in Low Places. You'll be glad you did. Find the show on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and have a fun little Reddit page. Or contact us directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Better yet, join the sick and twisted band of cultists that support my Patreon page. They get bonus episodes, insights on the show, and even influence over the show in some small measure. If you support what I'm doing here, then sign up.
And if you can't afford to pay, there is a free tier where you get teasers and previews for shit that you can't listen to. There are also discounts for annual memberships if you don't want to have a monthly charge. And of course, all patrons get a free signed copy of my book, Bedtime Stories for Weird Kids, mailed to them. Music this week, which was by turns subtle, suspenseful, and sublime, was provided by Beat Mechanic with Harley Davidson. This has unofficially become the theme song for Lurleen Stokes. We also had Lobo Loco with Burning Sunshine, Joint C Beat Laboratory with Tavern Smoke, Light Saturation with Hard Work, and Ove Moi Am with I Was Different. All of this music and tens of thousands of other songs and artists are available on freemusicarchive.org.